Thank you both so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, Christine, I think some people might find it interesting to hear how you ended up deciding to head to a war zone to teach creative writing.
Well, actually, my husband and I moved to Europe, to Germany, in 1995. It was about the time that the Dayton Agreement was signed, ending the Bosnian War. And just after we arrived in Germany, I contacted the University of Maryland European Division. And I was hoping to teach, I have a PhD in English and creative writing, and I was hoping to teach college classes to American soldiers who were on bases throughout Europe. And when I spoke to the academic director in English, he immediately said, would you be willing to go to combat training and go to Bosnia? And I knew immediately that that was my path. And I said, yes. And I was outfitted for BDU's camouflage military uniform. And so I headed to Hohenfels, Germany for training. And I had never, of course, actually, no one in my family had ever been in the military. So it was new to me. And I was most impressed by the young men and women throughout combat training. They never complained. We were marching up a mountain, actually crawling up the mountain, and the temperature dropped and it began to sleet and nobody had any rain gear. And I wanted, of course, to curl in a ball, but no, everybody carried on. And they were so dedicated and committed in a way that I admired. I thought, this is it. This is for me. I'd like to work with these people. So I got on a C-130 with them. Within weeks, I was sitting in a saggy green tent in the middle of Bosnia, teaching American literature to a group of soldiers huddled around a kerosene heater. And, you know, Walt Whitman has never looked better than under bare light bulbs. And the excitement and the just sense of discovery among the soldiers as we read Whitman was, I'll never forget it. And, you know, from then on, I decided this is it. This is what I want to do.
So how did you end up in Afghanistan?
So I taught for University of Maryland for a number of years, and then I became academic director in Europe. Eventually, we did move back to the States, and I was teaching for University of Maryland, and I was teaching military students online. Of course, I wanted to be more directly involved, so this was a big shift to feel such distance from my students. And I called and volunteered to teach in Afghanistan.
Do soldiers have time to take classes in the middle of a war zone, or is this some sort of enrichment process? Or
rank is now tied to college credit, so it benefits the soldiers to take college courses. Also, they do have evenings free, depending on their MOS, the military specialty. But many of the soldiers are free in the evenings, and taking a class provides an outlet for them. It's time outside of the military. It's time when they can say and they can write whatever they would like to say and write. And so there's freedom about the environment of a classroom that they just don't have in the military. So they shed that military persona when they come into the classroom. And they were very passionate about the readings. We, of course, began in our American literature and creative writing classes with pieces from Tim O'Brien and Larry Heineman and Joseph Heller. And we read soldiers. Soldiers were reading soldiers, writing about being a soldier. And they found that very inspiring, and it was a terrific environment. They seemed to love coming to class, you know. And as I said, it was a relaxed environment where they could be their civilian selves.
So, Andy, you took the class. What was it like coming to a class and part of your assignment is to write about your experiences?
Well, it was a class specifically for veterans, and so I knew I would be writing about that. And it was actually my first writing class. I've ever taken. Like, I took an American literature class, and that's when we were reading things like Walt Whitman and stuff, and I was like, oh, I want to do that. So I then the next semester, they were doing the first Chris's class of veterans' memoirs. So I went to the class and absolutely fell in love with it.
And what did you write about?
My first assignment was probably just about why we joined the Army. You know, that's like the first question anybody asks you when you get to your new unit. Like, so why are you here? You know, because that's a story that's usually different for every single individual in the service. You know, no one joins for the same reason. So,
are you still writing?
I still write.
So what most surprised you about the stories that were written and that you collected in this book?
I think the freedom with which they wrote. And I believe that they felt that freedom in part because there was such constraint in the rest of their lives. And because when you're in a war zone, you're always on the edge. Life and death are milliseconds apart. And one never knows. We had mortar attacks. We had rocket attacks. On Fab Salerno, for example, we held class in a bunker. So the danger was ever present. And I think they felt, you know, here was one place where they could have control, where they could have freedom, the freedom to create. And I think it was actually a release for them to walk into creative writing class. And, you know, it was interesting because they would stop on the way and pick up a candy bar or a hamburger. And, you know, they would come to class and they would share food they had brought to class. And the moments before class were very relaxed. And there was a special intimacy because they were sharing experiences through their writing that maybe they hadn't shared with anyone at home, for example, and certainly none of the people around that table. And a special relationship does develop between the teacher and the students, and they know that nothing they say will go beyond the confines of the classroom. And so it's just a unique atmosphere, very unique atmosphere.
Well, you took this class back in Austin, you said. Did you have this opportunity while you were serving in Iraq and Afghanistan?
No, we were pretty mobile, so we were never at a big base for very long where they had that kind of stuff.
What was it like for you to go through the process of writing about what you experienced?
Well, it was committing memories I have to paper, which was it was probably therapeutic, I suppose. You know, because it's like if, you know, like the feelings I had about it, I may not even realize that I had feelings, but being able to put the feelings and experiences on paper and then you kind of name the experiences and then that gives you some control over it. So it was able to a way to hold my experiences in my own hand and kind of see them from an objective point of view.
One of your stories ended up in this book. I was wondering whether you could read some of what you wrote.
Yeah, I could read.
What's it called?
The Hate. In my second deployment, a FOB in Kabul, Afghanistan, we spent long hours in watchtowers or on foot patrols around the small camp we were assigned to guard and defend. During this time, I learned that the nature of reality and the cause of all suffering is desire. I set upon a path to free my mind from the binding chains of this illusory reality, or samsara, rebirth or transmigration. It was easy to meditate and be at ease of mind, because no violence was being perpetrated against us. Yet I carried a terrible burden. My oath to uphold and defend the Constitution was a barrier between my current situation and a life free of suffering. How could I foster compassion for my fellow human beings and at the same time ensure my M240 Bravo machine gun was accurate and clean, my ammunition coiled properly in the feed bags, and my crew trained and operational? I would walk the path of demons and give up hope of mental and spiritual liberation for my honor, as well as for the life debt I owed to my worldly comrades in arms. A good friend, Sergeant Moon, asked me one day before we left whether I would be able to pull the trigger. I had confided in a few about my realization that acts of violence only set us back, and that true liberation and peace would come through nonviolence and compassion. Men-at-arms do not care for true liberation and peace, I soon realized. Most only want their three hots in a cot. Upon taking my oath, however, I was reborn into a platoon of men-at-arms. I'll pull the trigger, Sergeant. Don't you worry about that. I keep my word. Every day before patrol, I prayed that no target would present itself. I kept a tin bracelet engraved with the Sanskrit mantra Om Mani Padme Hum, the mantra of the Bodhisattva of Compassion, on the buttstock of my machine gun. I wrapped a long sandalwood mala bead necklace around an ammo can. Keep my brothers safe and my enemies away from me became a near constant mantra that I would repeat before and after meditations. One night, our four trucks are on patrol outside of Taji. The sky is clear and the stars crystalline in their perfection. A distant explosion, and soon, after a call comes over the net that second platoon's patrol has been hit by an IED, one truck disabled, backup requested. We're en route before the order for us to move is even given. The hit truck lies upside down beside a smoking hole in the road. An angelic, blessed Black Hawk is already flying away, taking the casualties to safety. Their patrol's leader, the platoon sergeant, is screaming mad. As he curses furiously into the night, a squad leader tries to hold him back because he is fighting to get to the nearest house. I know you're fucking in there. I'll fucking kill every last one of you fucking people. The driver, Blakesley, the fastest runner in the company, has had his knee destroyed. The gunner, Dawes, is pinned under the upside-down truck while burning motor oil boils the skin off his face. A gray morning is in full bloom by the time we get orders to return to base. With dragging tires, we slowly roll back to the FOB. As we pass through a market intersection a mile or two from the incident, a small boy in a doorway slices his fingers across his throat, glaring at me. I dash all thoughts of compassion and freedom from this life of suffering, shatter them against the raging inferno. Hatred has me by the throat. Choking despair and churning fear all boil into one cataclysmic ball of loathing and pity. The tragedy of war is the realization that it would be all too easy to exterminate everything. I understand immediately how a company of soldiers could burn and murder a village. I understand the nature of hatred, vile and corrupt. Gladly does one put the noose around his own neck for a chance to strike out with murderous vengeance against those who would seize our cherished way of life and throttle the breath out of its lungs. Fear, loss, and pain are the bedfellows of maddening hatred. Later, the bombs would fall around me, but I would never see a target of opportunity. Always the ghosts and the bombs and the craters, never a chance to let hot 7.62mm bullets fly. I would come to realize that the enemy is as hateful and murderous as we are. When crossing bloodied pools of former children, or cleaning up the body parts of a voting assembly, or finding a suicide bomber burning in his own failed contraption, the hatred flies both ways. Boiling, we stew in this cook pot of the war. There is evil in the world, and it lies within the acceptance of war and violence. Time passes, and I find myself outside of the military, home, standing out of Valero gas station, a lone cigarette as my refuge. I find a shadowed corner to crouch in. I still haven't figured out what to do with this rage inside. A Muslim American woman walks into the store. I try in earnest to stamp out the irrational racism I feel. It's all too easy to think of that village, that boy with murder in his eyes. The murderous intent burns you alive.
apparently you were a pacifist.
I decided that to become a pacifist about halfway through my 4 years in, which caused some schisms. But, I basically decided to put the, like, I understood that pacifism is the only way. But at the same time, I decided to put it on hold, which caused, like, a really weird moment in time for me where you know what the right thing is to do, but you choose not to do it because it's also the right thing to do. You know, so it's very weird where, like a paired opposites where both of them were true, but one more temporary in the, you know, because the right thing to do at the time was to stay on and help my buddies, you know, like I would never turn my back on them or break my contract because they mattered more than my own personal salvation did. I guess I went with that. And then I got out, you know.
Taking writing workshops.
Taking writing workshops.
Andy Stock, Christine Lesh, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.